Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns, and on today's little episode I'm going to be reading an extract from Keith Foskett's book High and Low, about a journey through the Highlands of Scotland, which I think will seem quite familiar to many of us. Before I start, I wanted to say a few things. These are pretty dark days right now, and I just want to acknowledge a lot of you will have relatives or friends or frontline workers, and I think that causes a lot of worry and a lot of stress for everyone. My daughter is a frontline worker, and I was only thinking, you know, worried about her a bit, but thinking, well, you know, to be fair, there must be millions of people in that position. So if you know someone, if you look after if a member of your family is a frontline worker, you know, I'm thinking of you. And if you know someone, you know, as a relative who's a frontline worker, maybe give them a call, see how they are, eh? I don't know what you've been doing to pass the time in lockdown, as it were, but I resurrected my old bike. I got it out of the shed, you know, and I've started cycling again. I haven't been cycling for quite a while. I don't know if you've started cycling after a long gap, but those little saddles they have, well, they're pretty narrow. And they can make an impression on you, is the best way I can describe it. But what I did was, I finally managed to get myself, you know, a nice pair of real proper cycling shorts with one of them paddings that goes under your crotch. Very, very luxurious it is. And since I've had that, cycling's been a completely new ball game. Yeah, I decided to cheer myself up the other day. I thought I'd have cook a chicken. I don't cook chicken very often. I don't eat meat very often these days, really. But, you know, now and again, a chicken's an event, isn't it? You put a chicken in the oven, bring it out. Great stuff. And I got the chicken home from the supermarket. And when I took it out of the bag, they'd actually tied its legs together. Well, I took a look at the chicken, and to be quite honest, I'm no vet, but I'm pretty sure that bird's not going to leap up and run off. You know, you start doing things and you're in lockdown you haven't done for a while. And I thought, well, maybe I'll clean the oven. And I started to think, you know, how long it had been since I'd cleaned the oven. And I realised I hadn't cleaned the oven since I had it from new. And that was about 7 or 8 years ago. So I haven't cleaned the oven for 7 or 8 years. And I don't know whether to be ashamed or proud of that, to be honest. But I saw an advert. It said, sooner or later, you always have to clean the oven. And I thought, well, I've gone 7 years. It's not blown up. I'm thinking of moving fairly soon. You know, I might get a different house and I'll probably get a new oven. So actually, my revelation to you is this is a moment of zen. You actually never have to clean the oven. Bugger it. Life's too short for cleaning the oven. So I'm going to read you a bit from Keith Foskett. For those of you who don't know about Keith, Keith's a very experienced long-distance walker. He's completed the El Camino de Santiago, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Appalachian Trail. That's thousands and thousands of miles walking. I think the Appalachian Trail is 2,180 miles. It sort of puts the Pennine Way in its place, doesn't it, really? Anyway, what Keith doesn't know about long-distance walking, quite frankly, isn't worth knowing. So I'm going to read this little excerpt here from High and Low. That's his book about walking across Scotland and about coping with depression. So, which is a surprisingly funny book, I have to say. So anyway, here's a little excerpt which I think beautifully captures, well, basically the misery of walking through the Highlands, really. I'm hoping that Keith Foskett will come on the show fairly soon, so get a wee interview with the man. Anyway, here's a wee excerpt from High and Low, How I Hiked Away from Depression Across Scotland, by Keith Foskett. Glendu Bothy looked captivating at the end of Loch Glendu. It was only 3:30 p.m., and I'd covered just 12 miles. But I couldn't pass up the opportunity to add another bothy to my tick list. I set my pack down in anticipation. After all, it wasn't as if I had a schedule to keep. Built in 1880 by the Duke of Westminster, The Bothy is a former estate keeper's residence. I saw a house about 100 yards away that appeared to be occupied. It was tempting to knock on the door, looking hungry and thirsty. But I figured the residents enjoyed the privacy of their own remote house, otherwise they wouldn't be living there. Plus, I imagined they received their fair share of sodden, tired hikers, annoying them at regular intervals throughout the year. The green door creaked hauntingly as I pushed against it and stepped inside, my eyes straining to find a bearing in the dim light. The smell of a recent fire swirled around. As my eyes adjusted, I saw that there was one room to the right and another to the left. A flight of stairs to the rear revealed more space in the loft. But I chose the room downstairs for my stay. A rickety table leant precariously against the wall, bathed in mid-afternoon sunlight streaming through the window. The Bothy logbook, a discarded whiskey bottle, and a few tea lights scattered the scratched tabletop. A solitary chair sat tucked underneath, its slats streaking the dusty floor with lines of shadow. I still cherish memories from that afternoon. As I returned outside, Scotland was in its prime. The sun soared high, and I felt it burn my arms. A few weak clouds made little impression, and even though the faintest of breezes struggled to stay focused, the midges were nowhere to be seen. Ben Amutha lifted skyward behind the Bothy, whilst across the loch, Ben Erdelock stared back valiantly, attempting to trump its rival. A burn tumbled and frothed as I collected water, and I sat on a low stone slab outside, leaning back against the wall as countless other guests had done before me. I brewed a cup of Earl Grey and tipped a dehydrated dinner into the rest of the water, then waited for it to come to life. And there, as I sat for 5 hours, reading, squinting at the view, and taking in the experience I'd come to Scotland to witness, sucking in every last glorious morsel. It was a gentle reminder that, despite yearning to pull lots of miles each day, sometimes I just needed to rest and experience the place I was travelling through. The god of remaining stationary smiled and gently prodded me with raised eyebrows. Eventually I returned inside at dusk, succumbing to tired eyes, hypnotized by the light streaming in through the window, painting patterns on the stone walls, until darkness tumbled in and the sun left Glendhu. When I woke, the world outside had changed, and it was angry. I wiped condensation from the window and pressed my face against the glass, peering outside. Loch Glendhu was raging, the wind whipping up her waters into a frenzy. Dark clouds had formed overnight, obscuring the summit of Ben Erdelock, and a fierce wind roared. Now the Bothy walls screamed in surrender. Rain rattled the roof and water cascaded down. The ground outside, unable to cope with the torrent, flooded and danced excitedly. In keeping with the elements outside, my feelings had also changed. I was melancholic, inspired just a few hours earlier by the high I had felt. I struggled to understand why. Conditions aside, I tried to fathom why my mood had spiraled downwards so violently. I was, after all, still hiking, still in the glorious wild, and still with the prospect of several more weeks doing something I loved. My mind returned to the Continental Divide, and I realised there was a correlation, a state of mind I had experienced during those 5 weeks in New Mexico, an emotional state that, at times, had reduced me to tears. Not so much tears of sadness, but more from a failing to understand why I was sad. I battled to concentrate, my mind restless and unable to focus for long periods. However, when I could grasp a few minutes of clarity, a brief escape from agitation, I realised with alarm that my sombre moment in Glendhu was familiar. Not just in the present, not just on the Continental Divide Trail of the previous year, but clawing with ugly, demonic fingers back into my past even further. I circled the Bothy aimlessly for an hour, hands in my pockets, head bowed, and thinking of little. The only activity I indulged in was kicking the floor. Sitting in the chair, I stirred at nothing, my focus glazed. Despite the lack of desire, I felt no need to bring myself out of it. In fact, despite the complete negativity, I continued to indulge in the anguish, confused but strangely content. Eventually, in despair, I made plans to continue to the next town, rest in a hotel, and get the hell out of Scotland. Nothing made any sense. I wanted to go home. I tried to check the weather forecast on my phone, but there was no signal. Resigned to a day of being buffeted by the elements, I packed up my gear and said goodbye to Glendhu. I knew Glencoolbothy was just 3 miles away around the headland and would provide a place to rest if conditions were as bad as they looked. I headed east for half a mile before reaching the end of the loch and turning west back on myself, angling away from the loch shores to begin the climb. The raindrops fell harder and fatter, splashed onto the trail, which already had been transformed into a small stream that gushed over my shoes as I progressed upwards. Angry clouds raced overhead as my path turned again and swung southeast, descending to meet the shore of Loch Glencool and the Bothy. Beaten into submission, or at least in need of a rest, I virtually fell into the Bothy. Water dripped off my poncho and I wrung out my socks, rubbing my feet to restore some life. I checked the map for options and noticed the trail split into two variants from the Bothy. Bold red dashes signified the better of the two, but the route that headed too far east, a collection of houses known as Inchnadamph, was around another 10 miles further down the other track. This route appeared more difficult, which I noted from the red dots on the map, but it steered a more direct course to Inchnadamph. I was soaked to the bone and due to get even wetter, so I decided on the harder of the two trails, comforted by the fact that hopefully it would be quicker and there would be lodging at Inchnadamph. Heading out, I stayed close to the shore of Loch Beg with its waters narrowed into a river. There was no trail, but I knew that my route hugged the eastern side of this river. Hemmed in on one side by a wire fence, on the either other by rockfall, I tentatively picked my way across the fallen boulders, holding the wire to steady myself. I could see Ys na Siúl Ailín waterfall, but it wasn't until I neared it that I realised just how amazing it was. The height of the fall stopped me in my tracks at 658 feet. It is higher than Niagara, and the highest in the UK. What amazed me was that I had never heard of it, let alone seen it. I sat during a brief respite from the rain and watched the falls plunge over the vertical rock to feed the river below. There were no tourists out here. I had the spectacle to myself. The falls tried to lift my mood, and they succeeded somewhat. Half a mile further, I had to climb up the side of a ludicrously steep valley. With the storm ripping in from the rest, I remained sheltered lower down. However, when I reached the top, all hell broke loose. I barely managed to hold myself upright as the wind hit. Rain stung my face and I cowered, turning away. There was only one thing for it. I needed to get inside the Bat Cave. My poncho protects my body from above knee height and also covers my pack. The sleeves are short, just covering my upper arms, so I can withdraw them inside and duck my head down in there, closing the opening. I call it the Bat Cave. It's dry, warm in a clammy sort of way, dim but generous in its proportions. I can eat in there, dry and away from the hell outside, read the map on my phone, and enjoy a few minutes of relative calm to regroup. although it smells musty with undertones of body odour, so time is limited. I needed to assess my circumstances. I'd experienced dangerous situations a few times in the outdoors. The incident on the Continental Divide Trail weeks earlier and the horrific experience during whiteout conditions in the Lake District, to name just two. I tried to resist the urge to panic, but this onslaught was scaring me. The very storms that I knew slammed the Scottish west coast, the wild elements I had feared, were now getting personal. Well, I think you'll agree that pretty much captures the misery, doesn't it? my apologies to Gaelic scholars who are probably at this very moment doing backflips down the hall at my Gaelic pronunciation. I enjoyed reading that, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it. And we should be having Mr. Foskett on the programme very shortly. So thanks very much for listening. You take care now. Bye-bye.